Good evening and welcome, friends. Your presences are all a blessing to us as we come together in our shared intention for the fullness of life, the fullness of possibility in Christ, as Christ. So joining in holy remembering that there is light and there is choice, there are laws of the universes, and there are possibilities for the arising of our consciousness, the evolution of our being. We begin in the name of God transcendent, God omnipresent, and God immanent, the Holy Living Trinity. Amen. And as our Christ candle is lit, it is a continuing affirmation of this truth. So tonight we began by remembering Father William Menninger, a monk, a teacher, a scholar, a Catholic priest, a writer, and a mystic who died 2 years ago on Valentine's Day, February 14th, with a kiss from God. Father William was living in the same room that Thomas Keating was in the infirmary of the Trappist Monastery in Spencer, Massachusetts. He was a good friend of the church and loved the church and came here many, many times. He, along with Father Thomas and Basil Pennington, were the co-creators of the centering prayer method. And in that, we owe him very much. But in addition to that, he was also a learned scholar and teacher of the teachings of Julian of Norwich, the Enneagram, the forgiveness prayer and practice, and perhaps most notably, or one of the most notable things, is that he claimed to have read The Cloud of Unknowing over 200 times. And he liked to say that the whole contemplative way is a way of learning and listening and responding by studying something and applying it to ourselves over and over and over, until it fully imbues our being and becomes a living part of it. So here are three short quotes by Father William. Our minds try to understand God. Attempts to know God have to give way to loving God. We cannot do anything to earn God's grace, but we can remove the obstacles. Grace is the presence of God. Everything is a grace. Everything. 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 This is an appropriate prelude to our subject tonight of shocks. Father William was a beloved friend, and now he resides in the communion of saints. And we ask you, Father William, to watch over us this evening and always. Just a little note for those of you who are participating in journey groups and work partner relationships. Hopefully you are now connected with your group or your work partner. And may these relationships nourish you richly, and know that they are given as vehicles of grace by the Holy Spirit. It is only ours to say yes, to participate, and to persevere. So may it be a rich and blessed year for us all. And so now we prepare ourselves to enter into Lectio Divina. and in the relationships of a journey group or a work partner. How we come matters. What we bring matters. How we participate matters. For that is what we are emanating into the group. And no matter whether we are 1 to 1 or 1 to 8 or 1 to 108 or more, we're here to create a vessel of grace, to receive and to transmit the highest of influences. And so now, here and now, we place ourselves with intention and imminent trust and receptivity to the influences coming from the circle of conscious humanity. And we prepare to receive these influences this evening and take them in with high valuation. So with back upright, mind quiet, in directed attention, body relaxed, noticing perhaps places of tension or constriction or resistance. We breathe into them and simply let them go. We breathe in deeply all every most hidden parts of our being, all being, everything, everything that passed through us this day, our world today, everything that hurt, that confused, that created fear, that brought heaviness, that left us feeling powerless, less than, more than, everything. Everything that uplifted, that loved, that brought joy, all affirming, all denying, and we hold it as offering, reconciled as food for being. We lift it, ask that all be transubstantiated in our being as whole, as lovely, as radiant, as beloved of God, as we ourselves are beloved of God. We do this on behalf of everyone and everything. And we breathe out this healing light into the world, all worlds. It is our gift. I hand over all complexities. I hand over all plans. I hand over all anxieties and small fears of my heart. I open to the divine human life. I am here. I am. I wish. I can work. I stand unencumbered before God and one another. And so it is. We now enter into the time of Lectio Divina, and we will share our reading. It will be read 3 times. The invitation is to take it in, perhaps gazing at the image. How does it inform us? Where does it come to meet us? How will we respond? For I am convinced that neither shocks, nor death, nor life, nor angels, nor rulers, nor things present, nor things to come, nor powers, nor height, nor depth, nor anything else in all creation will be able to separate us from the love of God in Christ Jesus, our Lord. Remind ourselves about this always, every day, everywhere, and everything. For this self-remembering gives a shock to the whole being and provides food for the cells of the body. For this reason, it is called the first conscious shock, because it is to be done deliberately, intentionally. It does not arise mechanically. This work is very personal, intentional. Accomplishing aim, completing an octave, depends upon it. We each must do our own work. For I am convinced that neither shocks, nor death, nor life, nor angels, nor rulers, nor things present, nor things to come, nor powers, nor height, nor depth, nor anything else in all creation will be able to separate us from the love of God in Christ Jesus our Lord. Remind ourselves about this always, every day, everywhere, in everything. For this self-remembering gives a shock to the whole being and provides food for the cells of the body. For this reason, it is called the first conscious shock, because it must be done deliberately, intentionally. It does not arise mechanically. This work is very personal, intentional. Accomplishing aim, completing an octave, depends on it. We each must do our own work. For I am convinced that neither shocks, nor death, nor life, nor angels, nor rulers, nor things present, nor things to come, nor powers, nor height, nor depth, nor anything else in all creation will be able to separate us from the love of God in Christ Jesus our Lord. Remind ourselves about this always, every day, everywhere, in everything. For this self-remembering gives a shock to the whole being and provides food for the cells of the body. For this reason, it is called the first conscious shock, because it is to be done deliberately, intentionally. It does not arise mechanically. This work is very personal, intentional. Accomplishing aim, completing an octave depends on it. We each must do our own work. And so it is. You are now invited to share what you received from this passage, or perhaps from the image. Good evening and welcome, Gay.
Thank you, Marianne. I was struck by the image. What I saw there was the fragility and the beauty of the butterflies. And against that background of the seemingly eternal sky and the constellations there, and it reminded me about my life and our lives, the struggle that the caterpillar actually goes through in order to become that beautiful thing, that beautiful, fragile thing, and the shortness, actually, the brevity of the butterfly's life. I remember Tim Cook telling us over and over again that we must work as if our house is on fire. Thank you.
Indeed. Thank you, Gay. Thank you. Marcia Silver, good evening.
I was trying to unmute and I kept getting the host is not allowing you to unmute. Hi, everybody. I was really struck by the middle paragraph in its entirety, and especially the very first sentence of that. Remind ourselves about this always, every day, everywhere, in everything. And that I associated with the quote from Menninger just a minute ago that had was actually kind of a shock to me. The last quote, I think it was, where he said, grace is in everything. And he kept repeating the everything. Yes. And that is just a wonderful, the whole second paragraph, but especially those everythings, are such a wonderful, succinct reminder to me to look for that grace in everything, everything, even the shocks of having, and mine are very often huge pangs of nerve pain. And they come out of the blue, and you can't expect them, but I'm looking for the grace in them now and trying to meet those with the welcoming prayer, which was also mentioned in the prelude. And I hadn't thought of that prayer for quite a while. So it's been a very rich 10 minutes already. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Marcia. And thank you for the reminder about the efficacy, if you will, of the welcoming prayer. Thank you.
Oh, thanks.
Mimi, welcome.
Okay. Good evening. I was delighted in two really strong ways in the first paragraph. The first time I just really felt it and more than listened to it. And it was, as the sentences went on, it became more expansive. Mm. It went from a very contracted to very expansive. And then I really listened the next time and was reminded when Tim Cook would teach us, when he taught us the Neti practice. And it's a practice where I would say, you know, everything that comes to me, I would say Neti, and it's not this. And it, you just keep backing into a very expansive place like the paragraph did. And that's just been very helpful to me. So thank you.
Oh, thank you, Mimi. Thank you. Margaret, good evening.
Good evening, Marianne and everyone. I saw a parallel between the metamorphosis of the butterfly from the egg to the larva, to the pupa, to the adult, and then the octave where you have the egg kind of like the me, realizing the difficulties of this metamorphosis in our transformation. And then you have the larva. We're applying the ideas of the work in our life, and the larva is trying to eat. Mm-hmm. And then the pupa stage comes. And so that's the valuation of how is this valuable value? How does this, that I've kind of had trouble with that. That's a question I'll have later maybe, but then the adult comes, but between the pupa and the adult, that's where I kind of thought the shock might be there, because here's the great big world. And so I kind of paralleled that to the first conscious shock. Mm. And so that's it.
Thank you, Margaret. And you'll have a chance to explore that further in just a very few minutes. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
So we have time perhaps for another, if someone else would care to share. Surely there's a man out there that would like to share. Ah, there you are. Howard, good evening.
Good evening, Marianne and everyone. But I always relate the first conscious shock to, at least initially when I'm remembering to do that, is the transformation of whatever it is that's incoming. The transformation of the incoming impression. And that's the passage you spoke about, and the home or the email this week talked about the personal part of that, you know, really keeping it on our own bones and what, you know, that transformation of that impression might do for definitely for myself, but for possibly whoever I'm with, for the community. Who, I mean, it just expands out. So I think that is, it just feels to me like such a useful, and of course all the work ideas are useful, but for me it's one of the most useful work ideas. Thank you.
Thank you, Howard. And thank you everyone for your sharings, your ponderings, for all of us as we take in these impressions. So now it is my joy to introduce Peter, who's going to accompany us in closing part one of our curriculum for this year. And after the sharings from last week, he is going to introduce the gift of shocks. Peter, welcome.
Thank you, Marianne, and good evening, everyone. Tonight, we'll begin with sharing of the homework from last week's email and Robin's teaching. So I'll briefly share the screen that will help us all remember the homework and go from there. So the main idea of the homework was to ponder for yourself if you could discover something of your experience of the octave of creation or the octave of transformation, and in particular, apply it to your wish or your aim for participating in the Journey School this year. Is there a compelling need, a deep wish? What will pull you through the inevitable difficulties this year? We are going against the stream. The first three steps of the work octave, do, re, mi, applied to the work. The first is valuation. The second is application of the ideas and putting them on. And then the third is this realization of difficulties that comes as we do the work, or as the work becomes boring, or we become distracted by other things that happen in life. And oftentimes, then the octave stops at that place of mi-fa interval in the octave. We stop at when it gets hard, or we don't like a particular class, or we don't like reading the emails, or we get upset about our journey group, or anything of a lot of reasons why we come up against a difficulty. Anyway, to observe where this is happening in our work. So this past week, the journey groups and work partner relationships all began. If you are participating in these ways, share your wish, your aim, your valuation with one another, and then consider reviewing it, throughout the year. So I guess the invitation tonight is to share what you shared with your journey groups or with your partners, your work partners. What are you seeing in terms of your own experience of this do, re, mi? Where are you at on the octave? Many of us are just beginning, and we're starting with a really strong valuation for the work. We love it. We're exuberant about it. Even though we started with cosmology, people are still here. There's a valuation for it. And perhaps you haven't hit even the application of the ideas yet, which we're getting into more and more each week. So anyone wish to share where you're at or what you saw about your own experience of where you're locating yourself in this octave when it comes to the work and our work together? Who would like to share first? Just go ahead and raise your hands. Mary Leah, please.
It says the host is not allowing participants to unmute. Oh, am I unmuted? Oh, great. Good evening, Peter, and hello, everyone. My aim this year is to mean it. I've had the opportunity to read all the commentaries once through, been in the work for a number of years, and the octave for me is not a linear straight line like it's depicted, but more like what Michael shared as a circle that when viewed from the side is an ascending circle. In other words, it's like a spiral going upwards. And so I'm starting again. And what I'm observing is the eyes with which I'm reading, the ears with which I'm listening, and the heart that's receiving is not the same heart as when I first started the work. And so even though the concepts are not new, I'm applying it to a new person. And it's just remarkable. It's just really remarkable. I was saying to my work partner yesterday that one of the eyes I have, I call slapdash rush along. And she does things quickly and she does a lot of things. And she's a mile wide and an inch deep. And that one is receding. And the one who wants to be a mile deep is now starting to emerge. And I'm just delighting in rereading things that I read and being startled by how little I understood. It's just absolutely marvelous. I did want to say two things. One, from reading Mimi's contribution this month to the mark, I wanted to just say thank you to Mimi, first of all, but the reminder to try things on, and Howard said this too just a moment ago, he said, put it on your own bones. It's such an important thing to do, to not just work on the side of knowledge, which of course we do at the start of the work, but to really try stuff on and see how it fits you. And that's going to mean that some things won't fit. So I guess I wanted to say to some of the new people that if some idea comes up that you don't like, it's okay not to accept it until you can verify it for yourself. And it's okay to look at some of the things in the commentaries and say, that just doesn't resonate with me. And that's the beauty of the work, that we do it, our own work. But the second thing I wanted to say is that while we do our own work, we are a community. And that's where I think the real rubber hits the road. You can be a saint when you're on vacation by yourself. You know, the real work comes from when we're in those sticky places, those me-fa intervals and relationships with one another. And we are together in this. We are work students. So again, to the new people, welcome and, you know, enjoy the wisdom of others. Ask questions in your journey groups. If there's words that confuse you or puzzle you, and that was raised in the email today, it is like its own little language. You've come into a new country and, you know, the glossary is great, but just ask questions if things are confusing. And the people who love the work will love to be there for you. So I'm on a new spiral and I'm delighted. I'm humbled and grateful. That's where I am this week.
Thank you, Mary Leah. That's a lot to share. Thank you so much. I love the self-observation of the I in you that's not particularly too flattering, that you put it out there. And I love that you see that and can be lighthearted about it. And really encouraging words for all of us to just keep at it. And if something's not working, you know, put it aside and try something else, try reading a different commentary. Just keep the fire burning. We're going to go to Roland Cardenas, who is a new sharer tonight. Roland, please.
All right. Can y'all hear me? Okay. I see you nodding yes, but I can't hear. Okay. Anyway. Yes, I'm starting a new octave. I've been in two previous journey groups. year I opted not to participate in one. So I'm glad I rejoined. I was reading the weekly emails every week and tuning in every Thursday, not contributing a whole lot, but anyway, I realized at the end of last year, I got invited to an end of the year celebration of my wife's journey group, and to just see the camaraderie and the closeness and love that everyone had achieved, you know, was an eye opener for me. And I realized I missed a similar experience by not being in a journey group. And I am already feeling the benefits after only two meetings with my current journey group, you know, led by someone who's never led before, but he's very skillful. And it's just a joy to be able to recognize that with Zoom, so many in my journey groups are from out of state, and just to know that we're all united and wanting to be transformed is a great goal. And you know, one of my reasons for not participating in a journey group was I often felt I was the only one in the group that was a doubting Thomas, you know, that didn't buy into everything that was in those emails. But that's not true with the group I'm in right now. And so I appreciate Mary Leah's comments that she made. Thank you all.
Yeah, thank you, Roland, and welcome back to the community in this way. May you celebrate with great joy and love at the end of this year the fruit of your group together and your work together.
Thank you.
And yeah, thank you. Let's go to Don Hale, please, or Deborah Hale.
It's Don. Good evening, Peter. Hello, everybody. First, as I pushed a hand up, I thought, oh, wow, it was a year ago that I had my brain surgery and came on and just shared a little bit of my wackiness. And that was a compelling reason to self-remember in that moment, too, and just be able to let it all hang out to my family out here. And that was a compelling reason for me to sign up with the school again, because I realized that without my work partnership, without my school, without the groups, I will not remember myself. I will not work. I know that about myself. Last week's email really touched me in the DeSaltzman reading, Madame DeSaltzman, about the second heart, the heart that we practice the guard of the heart with. I saw that also as the heart that might be down a little bit lower in our solar plexus. And I applied that idea that what's in there, what have I been gaining, what has been put in there over the past 25 years. And what I realized was so many things, but generally the experience was, as I was sharing with my work partner, that the just feeling into that heart, feeling into what's in there, not understanding it, not knowing it, not trying to put a reason or logic to it, was what made it possible for me to realize that that was what people were seeing, the real me. So as I remember my heart, that heart particularly, that's the substance that Madame DeSaltzman talks about. You know, the other heart has blood, she says. This other heart has a certain substance, certainly its consciousness. It's also this, it's a flowing and interflowing of this connection between all of us that is remembered when we remember ourselves. And in this place of our heart, now I found a place, a location within my body. And using Robin's teachings last week, if I think about my emotional part of my intellectual center and then the emotional part of my moving center, that part, he says, that will lift up this moving part of the emotional center. And it comes up and it creates something different, this new substance that she talks about. So that compelling reason to join the school, and that night of the Oblate retreat, of the Oblate induction ceremony, I was totally feeling this into this place of this heart. This was the week before that email came out last week. So the experience of the application of the work principles, exactly what Mary Lay was saying, that now I'm applying the same principles I have been applying and applying and applying, but now they are more than principles. Now they are life laws. They are now part of the scale that I see myself in. I see that with my relationship with Deborah and all of our experiences. The shocks that come in now are completely different. Now there's more faith. There's a strength in the faith of knowing that all is well in that place, as long as I can remember and know this heart. So this has really been a powerful place when it comes to that last part, that personal difficulties, that even then, and then journey group members this year was talking about this last week, talked about this realization. He had 50 years he's been working on this one part, 50 years, and this week finally figured something out. He never quit. So we don't know how long it's going to take. We don't ever want to quit, because we don't know if that next time that we don't do it is the last time we ever have to do it. So it's just like Gay said, our house is on fire. Thank God. Thank God for everything. And thank God for this school and for you. God bless.
Thank you, Brother Don. And, you know, you said at the beginning that you know that about yourself, that if you don't do the work, or you don't read the emails, or you don't participate, that you will forget. And I can say that's not my experience of you. I've never experienced you as forgetting. You're always remembering and helping others remember and talking about it. Maybe you're having a different experience than how I'm experiencing you, but what you said just doesn't resonate from my experience of you.
Of you.
We're going to go to Frank Davis, and then we're going to go to Margaret, and then we're going to conclude with Jack or Jackie. Frank Davis, is that Paco?
Yes, Paco. Hi, everybody. Okay. Yeah, please, everybody still call me Paco, if you will. That's what my friends and family have always called me. I forgot to update my name today. I was glad to see personal difficulties come up, and I felt like that was kind of a calling for me to share. I do experience a lot of difficulties on a nearly daily basis. They do become more pronounced in those periods when we don't have the structure of the journey school in place. The holidays can be very difficult. And I think it just really shows how impactful all of these practices are, and really, you know, reaffirming valuation over and over again. I've been prompted by some of these things. The past couple of weeks have been difficult, frankly, with the teachings. Some of us are anticipating the more practical parts of the teaching. But even in spite of that, learning about the law of three and the law of seven was a good reminder of how things are ordered in a certain way, and how, there's a sort of a requirement in the work to invest a certain amount of energy into these ideas. And I was prompted to start checking out the documentary, The Fabric of the Cosmos. And as I was learning today, reminded of the idea of a quantum leap and what that really means. It's the idea that, you have things circling around a nucleus, but if you provide a certain amount of energy, they suddenly hop to a new state. And that made me think of the idea of the interval between me and Fa. So I feel us coming to a focus on that interval, and I'm really excited about it. And I wanted to voice out loud my own aim. And also, I know that I'm learning that an aim is somewhat easy to come up with, but to transform that into a wish is where real presence and three-centered observation comes in. And so in part, my aim is to turn my aim into a wish, but my aim as a one is to accept each in life as it is, and to know that it cannot be more or different. Glad to be with you all.
Amen, Paco. Thank you for sharing. And I think you speak for all of us. The discovery that our aim is to discover that it's hard to make a name or to keep a name. It's easy to make a name. It's hard to keep a name. And I think that's one of our first discoveries in the work, is how easy it is to make a name and then 5 minutes later forget it, much less a week. And then regarding the cosmology and, you know, your valuation for this and sticking through those difficult ideas, bravo to you and to everyone, really, to stepping into a whole new system and in whole new terms and a whole new language. There is indeed an order and rationality to it, even though if it's inscrutable at first. We'll go to Margaret, and then, as I said, we'll conclude with Jack or Jackie. Margaret.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for letting me share twice. I am continuing. This is my second year of the Journey School, and it's very important to me. I want to continue my growth and spiritual. I have that magnetic center, and I want to continue feeling that and growing spiritually. My wish is not my will, but thine be done. And I heard you in the sermon this Sunday, and it kind of reinforced my wish. I appreciate that. And the aim, and I was real taken by this from, I'm not really sure where it came from, but is to have a vessel that's sealed and can receive and can preserve the truth. And how I'll do that, I thought this through and wrote it down kind of so I could review it, is to recognize and anticipate second force. And then the second thing I could do to preserve the truth would be to self-remember. And then the question I had, well, the application is just doing the work and reading and be in the journey group and communicate and go to church. I do centering prayer, try to twice a day, 20 minutes. But the question I had that I wanted to ask before I close is, when I got to the valuation, I couldn't understand it because I couldn't put a value on these gifts from God. And I wanted you to maybe answer that valuation question.
Well, it's heartening hearing you describe your wishes and your aims and your experience of the work in the church. So thank you very much for articulating it so clearly. And, you know, recognizing the magnetic center is really attracting. Probably the question you're raising is more of a semantics thing about the word valuation. You know, it's kind of like Jesus' teaching of the parable of the pearl of great price. When you find that which you've been seeking for, or that you recognize extraordinary pricelessness of the teaching, you go and sell everything you have to buy the whole field. And there's kind of an exuberance there that we all have, the zeal of the beginner in the work, because we see there's something so, so incredibly helpful and useful and mysterious, and it calls to us. And it's you can't intellectually explain that to someone, and because you don't even intellectually understand the whole system yourself, but it's an emotional attraction. And in that sense, the idea of valuation, just to, I think, flesh it out a little bit, is the kind of value, is the kind of feeling you have toward a little innocent infant who's sleeping and taking a nap. You know, you just bow to that little infant and mm-hmm. say, you are so holy and beautiful and innocent and powerful. You don't even realize it. It's that kind of tenderness and love. And that's all I can think of at the moment in terms of what valuation means. And okay. I think, you know, you can just see that in the nativity scene with the wise men bringing their gifts and bowing to the infant. So the in the beginning was the wisdom and the work and the word, and it dwelt among us. So blessed are those who are meek and recognize that.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Okay, Jackie, please.
Okay, good evening. I can speak a little to valuation, and I'm always mystified by the way the spirit moves through things and offers opportunities that we really don't understand until it's right there in front of you, presented by the spirit. For me, valuation is valuation of the work, and it becomes a love relationship. And I find the work to be a jealous lover. If you don't value the work and you let it go cold too long, it departs from you and it is not present to you when you need it. So we start out sounding a passive, but a really strong do if we can, if we want to get all the way to the end of the octave. And so what I have found, and I found this past year, is I was getting less and less connected, and as less passionate about the work. And it was getting colder in me. So as a new year came on, and I am looking at taking on responsibilities as a facilitator in a new group and all the other responsibilities, again, the spirit came to me and presented me with this opportunity to revalue this whole process. And I did. I mean, I have been studying the law of three and the law of seven. I've already gone into shocks, as I've anticipated in the last several weeks, where we are going, really thinking about my role as a facilitator with the aim of being more present. And what I didn't recognize really until this past week in the work I've done this week is that I needed to be more present to me first. And I had an outside shock that came to me. I could not have calculated it. It was a real stunner. And immediately, I used life reactions in that first instance of shock, anger, hostility, I'll get even. But immediately, the work ideas came up to meet me. Just it was like, here was the line of the life ideas. I'm going to get even. I'm angry. How dare they? But over here was, I can work. And not only can I, but I have to work. I have to work. It's life or death for me. And it has been an incredible renewal for me of my passionate love for the work. And that's what I can give. And I'm delighted. I'm excited about this new year.
Well, thank you, Jackie. I can tell and celebrate that and appreciate how you just encapsulated in a very brief and succinct way without any story. You did work. You reported on, you know, your work without any story. You gave us enough to understand what you were dealing with. And that's the first conscious shock. What Jackie just described was transforming the impressions of a life event in a way that didn't take her down the normal route of those negative things she just described, getting back or getting even. So bravo.
Thank you, Peter.
That's a good, yeah, I'm glad we concluded with you. Thank you. Well, let's just rejoice for everyone courageous to share and for how you've edified the community and how you blessed yourself in reporting and putting that extra effort in and not just being passive tonight, but actively giving to the group. Thank you. Well, tonight we conclude the first section, as Marianne said, and we started out with some big, big ideas, the cosmology, and I'm going to try and begin tonight's lesson kind of explaining why we do that, why we start with cosmology. And then we'll get into the teaching on shocks. And so my aim for this sharing is not to be technically astute regarding the technical aspects of the first and second conscious shocks. There's a great deal of technicality in the work to both of these ideas. You can read about them if you click on the hot links in today's email, First Conscious Shock and Second Conscious Shock. And I'll give some other resources at the end of tonight's time. But my aim is to be less technical and to be more, you might say, general. So I'm going to share the screen here. Sorry, bear with me. So we've entitled this this topic this week, The Gift of Shocks. And let's see, are you there? It just said that Zoom stopped. Can everyone still hear me and see me?
Yes, and the sharing okay. Was there, Peter.
Oh, good. Okay. Okay, we're talking about this in terms of the gifts of shocks. And what I thought I would do is just explain cosmology first and how shocks kind of form a bridge between cosmology and our lived psychological experience. Every culture, every religious worldview has some form of cosmology. And your cosmology, to lesser or greater extent, shapes your view of life and reality, and in many cases has a lot to do with your view of where God is or what God is, or just the more transcendental qualities of existence are shaped by one's cosmology. And for centuries and centuries, human beings following the Greeks believed in what is known as the Ptolemaic system of the earth-centered view of the cosmos. And it was very much based on their sense perceptions. I don't need to go into this because we all know this is basic, you know, one-on-one science for all of us. But it wasn't until the middle of the 16th century, the 1543 publication of Nicholas Copernicus's book on the revolution of the heavenly spheres, that he shifted our understanding around a presupposition from being an earth-centered universe to being, or cosmos, you could say, to being a sun-centered or heliocentric. So this shift upended a great deal in religious circles, especially in the Roman Catholic Church. And we don't need to go into detail about this, but it was a huge shift for people to say that the earth wasn't the center and to break out of their mythological story in the book of Genesis and to see it in a different way. And in many ways, a lot of people still haven't gotten over that shift. They still don't, in a certain sense, fully accept that shift, that the earth is not the center of the cosmos or the universe. So cosmology is very, very important. But it's kind of like, you know, your rich uncle who lives overseas. He might impact your life if he endows you, but day to day you have no interaction with your rich uncle, but it shapes perhaps the future of your life significantly in very practical ways. But this cosmology thing is interesting, and you know, each one of us has to struggle to put on the ideas and find out what works for us. It's very difficult to verify, for example, the conceptual cosmological idea of the work, that there's an interval between the absolute and then all the universe. There's no way for me or you or anyone to verify that statement. So, and the work asks us to verify everything. It doesn't ask us to believe anything, just to verify it. So certainly you might believe this kind of structure or model or framework of the cosmos, but the only place you're ever going to really verify this model is in your own life. And that's humbling and should all keep us practical. But one of the things I wanted to communicate very clearly is that the cart follows the horse. That, you know, is the egg come first or the chicken? Well, in this case, the model or the framework or the template or the mythology of the cosmology of the work comes first and builds into it these shocks. So in other words, if you had a different cosmology, if you had a different model of the universe, that model may not include shocks. It's just because of this particular cosmological model that the work uses, that Gurdjieff developed or synthesized, and that Uspensky further synthesized, has this particular model based on this octave, the musical octave, that it has these shocks built into it. You know, it didn't start out by saying, here, let me find a shock, and then I'll build a model of the cosmos around that. That's not how it worked. They built a model of the cosmos, and then they put these shocks in there, and then they found the shocks in day-to-day life or in personal experience. And this we know from the statement that is so celebrated in esoteric and hermetic literature, as above, so below. Jesus said a little differently, bear in mind, though. He said, pray that God's will would be done on earth as it is in heaven, not that earth would become heaven or that all of reality would collapse into above, but that there would be a correspondence or increasing correspondence between the two. But because of this presupposition of this principle, as above, so below, this affects their cosmology and basically says, what's happening at the level of the cosmos is also happening at the level of psychology. Cosmology is above, psychology is below. So you can see that principle playing out in terms of, you know, this particular model. You can see very simply that, you know, if you look at that piano scale on the image on today's email, you can see very simply where these intervals are located in the place of resonance or the semitone, the missing semitone. And you can go down that rabbit hole mathematically and musically, and Pythagoras and many, many other intellectuals throughout cultural history have done so. And for those of you who are mathematically inclined and that gins you up, go for it. You know, it's a wonderful rabbit hole. And there's a lot there to its meaning. But shocks, the main point I'm trying to make is shocks psychologically follow the lawful pattern of the great ray or law of seven cosmologically. Shocks psychologically follow the lawful pattern of the great ray or law of seven. That is to say, the cosmos births us. So we are the progeny of the cosmos. So just like a father begets a son, and the son is as the father, but not the father, so too, the cosmos begets the psychology on this planet and perhaps others. And so there's a correspondence there. There's a kind of likeness, as above, so below. I'm just making the case for why we acknowledge and bow to cosmology, and there's many more reasons. So applications of this big model of the cosmology, particularly the ray of creation and the embedding of the shocks in there, the two shocks, you can find how he applied that teaching, especially as it relates to the law of three and the teaching of the Enneagram of process or transformation. That's another rabbit hole that we can't get into. In fact, you can study yourself to fatigue, great fatigue, trying to understand the many, many ways in which the Enneagram can be used in all these different movements and different energetic flows, and how that process of transformation gets played out through the Enneagram and in the sacred movements in his dances. All of that, you can see the overlay of the law of seven and the law of three and the presence of shocks in the Enneagram process of transformation. Again, so much more to go into in terms of a rabbit hole there that can be useful if you're interested in that further. other related ideas to the shocks and the teaching of the shocks is how Gurdjieff and Uspensky applied that model, particularly the law of seven and the ray of creation and the hydrogens and the process of digesting hydrogens, particularly impressions, whether it's an event like what Jackie was describing, or whether it's physical food, digesting physical food, or whether it's just breathing in air. Gurdjieff has a tremendous amount of intriguing ideas about how food impressions, like watching a television or reading something, or air come into the system and are transformed, and has shocks as well applied to that process of transformation. You know, here's one famous diagram from Uspensky, and you can see these diagrams also in Maurice Nichols' commentaries. Again, it's a huge rabbit hole of intrigue if you want to, you know, try and play this out with something like that's practical for you. Personally, I find these types of diagrams that looking like, you know, 1950s electrical org charts that an electrician would use. But I don't resonate with this aspect of the work. But I wanted to just show you that there is a lot to the idea of the shocks, and particularly the gift that a shock does in terms of completing some form of energetic process and making sure that the shock occurs so that it, you know, that energy can be transformed and come to its fruition and move beyond just do, re, mi, do, re, mi, do, re, mi. So just real briefly, you see here impressions, air, and food. These are the three big categories that Gurdjieff used, or Uspensky used, to talk about, you know, what this human being as a machine transforms. And I just wanted to point out here that it starts out with a do, and each one, impressions, air, and food, all start out with a do. And you don't even need to know what the numbers mean at this point, but just notice that it starts out with a do, and that corresponds to the do on the octave, the ascending or the descending that we learned about last week. And then just notice how each do goes somewhere and gets the next circle at destination it gets to is do, re, then mi. Each one has an octave, and the first conscious shock and the second conscious shock are involved in the process of digesting or in transforming it into finer and finer energies. Again, very speculative, very conceptual, and not necessary to live a fruitful, wise, loving life, remembering God or remembering yourself. But in this model, you can explore, and it could call to some of us to deepen our understanding of what's actually happening. This is a model you can verify, very much so, in yourself, in terms of the various phases of transforming an impression or a breath or food. I think that's all I wanted to say, but I just wanted to just articulate that this idea of shocks is a pretty huge idea in the system. And it, because shocks are embedded into the model of the cosmos that is articulated in the ray of creation. If the ray of creation were different, if the model of the cosmos were different, all of this would fall apart. So just to illustrate this, these are some of the big ideas that connect with the cosmology. And because the works cosmology is a certain way, all these ideas are a certain way. Like, you know, a father or a mother begets the likeness in the mother, in the son or the daughter. And so the cosmology begets a likeness to itself, to octaves, to influences of our state of being, to mechanical influences of the moon that we heard a little bit about last week, to intervals and shocks, to mechanical laws that we live under, the law of three and the law of seven. All of this interweave into the cosmology. So you can see, to answer the question, why do we start with the cosmology, is not to drive people away, but it's to at least recognize that we're starting with the whole, the bigger nest in which all the parts dwell in. And you don't have to really accept or like the cosmology to do your personal work psychologically, but you at least can see where the psychology is grounded in and where it's coming from, and put the chicken, so to speak, before the egg. Another aspect to shocks, and this now is moving across the bridge from cosmology to psychology, because you don't need to have cosmology to explain this psychology that we're about to go into. It's helpful, but you could just tell someone about this and not mention any of the cosmology. You could just talk about the psychology and disconnect it from the cosmology. I don't think that would be wise, but it's possible to do. The diagnosis and the remedy, it's very important. You know, you can say, what does the work diagnose human beings with? What is the diagnosis that the work claims is wrong, or that it, what is the work trying to remedy? What diagnosis is the work trying to remedy in each of our lives? You know, there's a lot of remedies out there. What is the work remedy? And then what's the diagnosis it's trying to remedy? And in the work teaching, it comes down to some variation of what I'm about to say, that the problem or the diagnosis of humankind is that we are asleep. And that this sleep manifests itself or is the result of some level of unconsciousness, that human beings are awake, but they're actually asleep. We're sleepwalking, so to speak, psychologically or spiritually. And so you can really ask yourself, is that a true diagnosis? Is that diagnosis true to your experience? And for most of us, we wouldn't be here if we didn't kind of somewhat agree that, yeah, I need to wake up more, or there's something really funny about human beings that we keep repeating the same mistakes. It's as if we're sleepwalking. Or, yes, I wish to increase my level of consciousness or understanding. And so because of this sleep or this unconsciousness, we tend to be mechanical. That's another diagnosis that the work levies against humankind, is that we're machines. We don't even know what we're doing. It's kind of a ruthless diagnosis of human beings, because I tend to think of human beings as being children of God, but not just machines. And so, you know, it's one of those things where you have to just really wrestle with it. You know, to what degree do you really want to go say that a human being is a machine? And does that mean that you can just throw them away because they're a machine? You know, you can begin to see where this type of thinking can become quite problematic. So you have to take this with a grain of salt and within the context of grace. Because the truth is that it can be quite demeaning to people. And it can be very problematic in communities or spiritual communities where the diagnosis, you know, makes people feel more superior, because we have the special knowledge, we have the, we're awake and you're not type thing. You're mechanical and I'm not, this type of thing. And nevertheless, the work diagnoses us as being asleep, unconscious, mechanical, and therefore much prone to negativity and violence. And that basically the work is pretty pessimistic about human beings and says the history of humankind is one of violence, the history of violence. So a lot of people don't really realize that the work is so severely depressing when it comes to its diagnosis about humankind. It's very frank, very honest. And you can understand that in a context at the turn of the 20th century in the 1900s, that looking at the world as it was then, how a teaching like this would become very compelling, because for a lot of people, they did see the mechanization and the industrialization of the world happening right in front of their eyes. And it did seem to appear that human beings were this way. Now we deal with a different perspective or experience of what's happening in terms of computers and consciousness and artificial intelligence. But nevertheless, if that's the diagnosis, then what's the remedy? It might make sense that the system would value the importance of how a shock could be a part of the remedy to awaken. In other words, if the problem is that you're asleep or mechanical, it would make sense that part of the solution or the remedy to being asleep or mechanical is to give you a shock. So the psychological presence and the psychological validation of various teachers, and Mr. Gurdjieff especially, giving people shocks, and shocks being very much a part of the tradition of the work. And in this case, it was only the teacher that could give the shock, but also students could be awake or attuned to the fact that a shock was happening to them and they could use it, like Jackie was describing. So shocks only illustrate the diagnosis all the more. So what kind of system would have shock as being an important role in the system? Well, a system that says you're asleep, because if you're asleep, then one remedy to sleep is to shock you awake, to move you energetically, to help digest you and to help you develop and to become not just a blob missing the opportunity for a lifetime. So Maurice Nickel uses the illustration of transforming a steak, a piece of meat. You know, first it was a cow, and before that it was, you know, hay and water and sunshine and grass. Then it became a cow. Then it became a piece of meat. And then what do you do with that? You cook it, and then your body starts to digest it. And it's only in the shock of digestion process that it become that amino acid. That protein gets broken down in amino acids and it's useful for building muscle. So you can see it physically on that level and it can be applied psychologically. So just to continue a little bit further, and I'm almost complete, we can open it up for questions or comments. The application of especially the first and the second conscious shock, it also expands in the work teaching to a subject that I'm not going to get into tonight at all. But I did want to just acknowledge it in terms of what's so important about the work teaching of the shocks. Well, it turns out that the presupposition in the work, if you follow it to its end, in terms of those big diagrams we just showed that look like electrical charts, It turns out that the work claims something similar that Christianity claims, that actually, unless you receive this second conscious shock, transforming negative emotions, and the finer engine energy accumulates in you over a long period of time, unless you do that, you will never accumulate what is known as the karmic body or the etheric body or the psychic body or the spiritual body, this higher level body. And there are several of them, like sheaths that are possible to develop in oneself, according to the work, that these conscious shocks in the human being's life are helping us accumulate a quality of energy that builds a kind of life force or a new body that survives death and doesn't just feed the moon, but goes on to do something higher. Now, make of that whatever you wish. You know, it's hard to verify that unless you've experienced it or are experiencing it. And different traditions talk about this in different ways. For example, in Christianity, it talks about conversion or being born from above. Unless you are born from above, you cannot inherit eternal life. Or talking about receiving the resurrection body or the ascension body or the spiritual body and then the resurrection body. All these are indications that there is perhaps something to this, these shocks that are needed to acquire what the tradition in Christianity calls the wedding garment that allows you into the wedding banquet and not be left out. You're invited to the wedding, but then you're not able to come in to celebrate because you don't have a wedding garment on. And that's the Christian tradition's way of talking about the result of this type of inner work. Now, certainly inner work will bring that development to a being. It clearly does in people's lives. You can see it. But so does the grace of God in our lives and many other ways in which human beings can accumulate this. Many people in their development, obviously, in different traditions, reach that type of state. And they've never heard of the work or they never heard of Jesus. But yet in their own tradition, in their own culture, in their own time, in their own way, they received this extraordinary grace that comes from the development of the spiritual body. This process of transformation spiritually and psychologically, and particularly related to a body or a form of energy that survives after death of the physical body, you can see it in various places in Gurdjieff's teaching, but you can see it very clearly in several sections of his masterpiece, Beelzebub's tales to his grandson. And in that masterpiece, which is almost impossible to read literally, but if you read it allegorically or spiritually, it can bear quite fruitful insights. But he has this prayer, which is variously termed the holy equation or the holy prayer, the holy Trisagion prayer, the holy threefold prayer. I'm calling it the holy remembering prayer tonight. And it's ancient. It very much comes from Eastern Orthodoxy, Christian Orthodoxy. But Gurdjieff tweaked it a little bit, and I'll just read it to you. Holy affirming, holy denying, holy reconciling, transubstantiate in me for my being. And it's the last part of this that is the result or the fruit of the shocks. The shocks are the things that transubstantiate in you and in me for my being and its development. And we can't get into all the beauty and the mystery of what holy affirming, holy denying, and holy reconciling mean. That's the law of three and so much more. But the point is that notice that it's not just holy affirming, holy denying, holy reconciling, which is the traditional prayer. It's also transubstantiate in me for my being, and that's the shocks. And that's also self-remembering and holy remembering. So can't get into that, but you can see that there's a lot to this teaching, maybe too much. Gurdjieff is famous for his severity and also his grace, but one person quoted him as saying, "I give shocks, not sympathy." And I think that well summarizes the impulse of the work. That the teaching of the work says it's not about love, it's about consciousness. And so if you start there, you can see why maybe it wouldn't be a teaching about sympathy from a teacher. It might be something more severe, like a shock. And that follows logically to the diagnosis. If the system actually really believes that human beings are asleep, then there's no one to be sympathetic to. The person is asleep, so you give them a shock. Wouldn't want to press that too far, because Gurdjieff, in many ways, apparently was an extraordinary man of love and care and tenderness as well. But the point is that Christianity is about love, and the work is about consciousness more than anything. And I can quote you exactly page and in the commentaries where that comes from. Jesus demonstrated a kind of a shock ministry, and I just thought I'd point out a couple moments that weren't in the email, but particularly his interaction with the woman at the caught in adultery. And everyone was wondering what he's doing doodling on the ground. But I think whatever he was doing gave the woman caught in adultery a shock, a big shock. Maybe he was doodling the name of her lover, or maybe he was doodling I love you, or who knows what he was doodling. But the men were going to stone this woman. It's only the woman who's looking down at the ground, and Jesus knows this. And so this is a picture of divine grace, of the love that meets us where we actually are, not where we could be, starting where we're at in our being, not where we might end in our development of being. And it's also a reminder of how terrible being can go when it's mutated into dogmatic religion, and that religion turns into hatred and torture of killing someone because they happen to have a lover or whatever. And Jesus' teaching to the rich young man who came to him saying, "I'd like to be your disciple," and Jesus says, "Okay, sell everything and give it all to the poor and come and follow me." Shock. And it's a wonderful example of how Jesus used shocks in his ministry. That's all I have for this evening. And I'll just open up briefly for any comments or questions you might have. Yes, Mimi.
Um,
it was very apparent to me that this last ice thing we had with all the breaking trees, there was a lot of shock around that. And I remember Robin Amos telling us that when there's a cumulatively great shock, work students can make use of that and help be what transforms, you know, that energy. And you said it like pull your chair up to the banquet because it's a big one. So thank you.
Yeah, well, it does make some sense to think that a group consciousness can affect another group consciousness or are somehow impacting each other. Thank you, Mimi. Jim Taylor.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment. I really appreciate everybody saying in our work group, I think there was a consensus that this is difficult and we have to acknowledge that. And I remember last year when we started with cosmology, I think the best question that came out from a newbie was, well, where is love in this? And I think that's so important for me in my journey. And I think what's helped me the most is making sure I have impressions to start the day that are more, I think, on a simplistic, I think some of Father Keating, just some of the four readings I do help me to get those impressions so that I don't, to be brutally honest, I could not have a spiritual journey with just the work. And I think everybody agree that's not what you're wanting, but with the centering prayer, with the other impressions, to me, there's a balance that can help me on the spiritual journey. And also, as we've seen tonight, just the appreciation of the community and how we can learn so much from each other.
Yeah, so true, Jim. Thank you for sharing that. In fact, you know, I can honestly say that I wouldn't have come to the work had it not been for my spiritual journey, preparing me for it. And I wouldn't stay in the work if I didn't have a spiritual journey. That's grounded in the Christian understanding of love and grace. And I think at the Church of Conscious Harmony, that's fairly true as well, in that we say there's two legs of the church, you know, the centering prayer and the work. And I think it's the union of the two that makes it such a sacred and beautiful, magical thing, a thing of grace. So I think your counsel is very wise, and I hope people heard that certain influences are harder to digest. And, you know, like Mary Elias said, began our time together, if you're struggling with something, just start with something that works and let go of the thing that's not working, and maybe it'll come back to you. So thank you, Jim. I think that's all the time we have. I thank you for your presence and attention tonight for this subject as we move into the psychological and spiritual practice application of these big cosmological ideas. Marianne.
Peter, do you want to say something about the chat messages?
Oh, thank you. Yes. You know, I happened to come across this week in preparing two wonderful little articles. So I'm going to put in the chat right now those links. And, you know, they'll be on here for a little bit. But if you click on them fairly soon, you'll be able to copy it. And so that's that. So if you can't see that, we'll put them on the church website in terms of the resources. But they're there in the chat function right now, and you should be able to copy and paste the links there. Thank you, Marianne.
Yes. And thank you, Peter, and everyone for this evening. So let us close in the prayer. The prayer that we can all say aloud and affirm, the prayer of God's love, that God's love has always met and will always meet all my needs. I give freely and receive joyfully, and how blessed I am to simply remember God.